The podcast that you're about to hear comes from a program titled The RSL, A Time to Celebrate. These sessions have been facilitated by Christian Teusner from the Emu Tree in partnership with the Wakery RSL sub-branch. To explore further podcasts, visit thewaywewere.podbean.com. My name is Christian Teusner. Thank you for listening. I'm here today in Theberton, the home of Leslie John Dawson. Jack, can I call you Jack?
That's right.
Jack, thank you for agreeing to talk to me. Could I ask you please to state your full name and your date of birth, please?
Leslie John Dawson, 18th of August 22.
So you're 99 years of age now. How do you feel?
Okay.
Yeah, you've good health?
You have to speak up, I'm deaf.
Okay, I'll try. Could you tell me, Jack, please, where were you born and where did you grow up?
I was born in Moonta and we moved to Arthurton. That was our uncle's, he had two farms and we were on the other one for a while. Then we came down to Adelaide, to Lower North Adelaide, and I grew up there.
Can you recall any memories of life on the farm?
I know the bull used to get loose and scare the hell out of me. And his sister and I were down near the shed in the well. And he came in view. I left her, took off. We both run her back home. I left her behind. She was a bit slow. She was younger than me.
So what age were you when this happened, this incident?
Oh, I doubt when I started school. Came to Low North Adelaide in 29, I think. It'd be seven.
What streets is Lower North Adelaide?
Stanley Street.
Stanley Street.
Runs parallel with Melbourne Street.
Okay, so that was 1929. So where did you go to primary school?
North Adelaide.
Are they good memories, good times?
Yeah. In grade five, we had Timmy Wall. He was the fastest Australian fast bowler. That year he bowled Bradman's New South Welshman out for 36 runs. I was in Miss Priest's class. They spread us around till he came back. He came and got us and she embarrassed him. He said it was a fluke.
What was Adelaide like back in the 1930s?
Good, nice place.
After primary school, where did you go on to secondary school?
Central at Nailsworth.
So were you still living in North Adelaide?
Yeah.
So travelling each day? Yeah. Was it a large school?
Yes, had two grade sevens. My cousin was in the other grade, grade eight would have been. He was in the other one and I was in this one.
And what do you remember about your time there? Was there anything that really stands out that...
There was a bullet hole in the front window of the school. And Durafield, the escape from Yatlin, Durafield killed one of the men in the butcher shop. He was a mongrel. They sent him to Tasmania, I think, get rid of him. My mum told me later in life that she reckons it was her son that shot him in the eye, my brother.
What did your brother do?
He was a butcher by trade, but he loved the country. And he had a horse that wasn't broken in properly. He wouldn't let anybody ride it. And he rode it on the rock road to the Laura, and then it threw him, it was always throwing him, and it killed him.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
He was a bonzo, though.
Did you have other brothers or sisters?
Yes, three brothers and two sisters.
Did you all get along okay?
Yes, we did, very well.
And can you tell me, Jack, what were their names?
Come over. You want their names?
Yes. Can you?
Well, what Dad called us are their full names.
Oh, just their full names, yep.
Alexander, Donald Alexander, he was the eldest. Elsie Catherine, with a C, Catherine, was the next. And Nessie, and Keith, and Leo, Clarence Lionel.
So whereabouts were you in the scheme of things?
I was third, after Elsie. I don't know if you know what Nessie means. It's Gaelic for Agnes. That was her, Ethel Agnes was her name. They called her Nessie. That means Agnes.
Can you tell me a little bit about your parents?
Dad died of a heart attack and he was 39. They told me at the war when they checked me out that I hadn't got over his death. After the end of the war, they told me that. And Mum was wonderful. They wanted to break us up, the family, and she said, no, I'll keep them all together. And she slaved to everything, ironing, washing, cleaning houses, everything, to keep us together. And she got a good job and she was happy. She wasn't so tired.
Wow. It must have been tough. And what was your father's name and what was your mother's name?
Donald John. He was McRae. It's spelled up there if you want to spell it correctly.
M-A-C-R-A-E.
Yeah, capital R. He dropped the McRae. He was married under it. He dropped it and we didn't have all that to write, so we didn't have it.
And what was your mother's name?
Ethel.
And Ethel, her maiden name? Ethel?
Goldsworthy.
What did you do when you finished school? What was the next stage of your life?
Well, Mum got me, exempt from school. And I worked at Foy and Gibson's. They pulled the building down. I was very upset. So was the wife. She worked there.
And what did you do there?
Nothing.
What was the business? What did the business do?
When I left there, well, they did selling. That's what I like doing, out in the open. I worked at Coca-Cola, but that was outside. It was all right. And then I got the job with John Myfords. They're gone now, and then with Smith's, and they're an agent for Red Tulip Chocolates. They're an American firm. That was good job.
At this point in time, this is pre-World War II, what would you do for entertainment? What would you do to enjoy yourselves?
Well, Saturday night, we all used to go to the films, and we had the parklands, and I like swimming.
Were you a member of a swimming club?
I did belong to Walkerville. You know where the swing bridge is in Gilberton?
Yes.
Well, they're the other side of where the Gilberton Swimming Club was one side of the bridge and Walkerville was the other. I ended up belonging to both clubs, but I gave Gilson away for Walkerville.
So you must have been pretty fit.
Yeah, I reckon I was fit. I played football at high school.
Did you have any success with the football?
I can remember my first game. I was out from the wing, bounced the ball, and I got it. And the whistle went and I thought, well, I haven't done anything wrong. And I threw him the football and he threw it back to me and I didn't even thank him. I don't know what the free was for. That's all I remember of it.
So what year was your first game of football?
Oh, it'd be 36.
And it's clear in your mind, that game?
Hmm?
It's clear in your mind, that game, you can see
That's
it?
That's all I remember is yep. The bushel going, getting the free. I can remember I was at a stand, I didn't even thank him.
So what was your position?
I was on the wing.
Excellent, okay.
I saw one joker get a game for North and I wouldn't have even put him in the reserves. And he was playing for North Adelaide. We played on the Norwood Oval against North. I didn't like playing against them. That was my team.
Against Norwood?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're a red leg supporter?
Yeah.
Today, still a red leg?
Mum was even a red leg. She, we lived next door to, I can't think of his name, he's a top Norwood player.
It's a pretty successful club, the Red Legs, aren't they?
Norwood.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can tell you what happened. Sammy Gallagher, you know Philip Gallagher? Well, Sammy was his dad. He was at wing, he took the ball and he took off and he palmed it 15 metres down there and he picked it up at half forward and the whistle went. I thought, what's the whistle for? And he said, you dropped the football. Now, palming the football's not dropping it, and if you dropped it, it wouldn't go 50, you know, like that. And the next week he did it again, and the umpire, another umpire, said he was dropping the football. That was disgraceful. So he never done it anymore. The Norwood club should have asked something to the... Mm-hmm. I mean, palming the ball and dropping the ball is two different things.
Clarify.
And throwing the things... Mm. Yeah.
I hope you'll keep speaking to me, but I'm a Port Adelaide supporter. Right.
Yeah.
And
Sal's one of my best drinking mates.
Is he? Good on him.
No, he's not with us now, though.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But he even had, I think it was Ebert's number, jumper on his coffin. Now we've had some good games, those two. I've seen us once when we thrashed them on the Norwood Oval. And I've seen him thrash us on the Elverson Oval. And one good player was Bobby Quinn. Did you know him?
What year is this now?
Well, he won a McGarry Medal before the war. He won a military medal. And then he come back and won another McGarry Medal after the war.
Wow.
So it's gone back.
Mm.
Probably one of the Port's best. Ebert and him would be
he's
the
up
best.
There. He's in the Hall of Fame. Mm. So I grew up in the 70s going to Alberton. So Russell Ebert, I used to go and watch Russell. He was like...
He used to handball over the top.
Oh, just...
The umpires, I knew he was throwing it. And not, he handballed it over.
Mm. Mm.
Now he was an exceptional player. Yeah.
Going back.
I remember McDonald and Dougie Olds, they had some good fights. Not fights, good goes for the football.
World War II came along. How did you get involved with World War II?
First of all, four of us went down to the naval and they told us to go home to our mother. So we went to the Air Force and they gave us a pile of papers. We threw them over the city bridge. We all ended up joining the army.
So four of you together signed up together?
Yeah, but one we ended up in what do you call the, not the tanks, the open air ones they throw hand grenades in. One ended up in that and the other two ended up in the infantry. And I joined up with a kid that I went to school with, grew up with, and we ended up in the army. He's not with us now, but...
What was his name?
Geoffrey Laddie Werbel. He ended up, when we were in Changi, sent him up to Burma, and I went out Bucketima Road working and didn't see him till after the war.
Can I ask you, Jack, can you tell me what your service number was?
Essex 142. We were told we'd never forget it. We ever haven't.
What age were you when you joined the army?
18. And Royal Valguard, he was about SX 553, I think. He joined up just after it started and wrote a letter to us from the Middle East. He was over seas almost straight away. He went right through the wall, grease and creep. What?
How did you feel when you signed up? Was it exciting? Were you nervous? Or what? No, what were you feeling?
Just wanted to join up, that's all.
Whereabouts did you do your training?
We didn't do bus training. We were in the 4th MT.
And you said you didn't do much training. Was it only a few months? 6 months? Or?
No. We were let loose in Victoria. We were in the Caulfield camp, race course, and we have our breakfast and wouldn't come back to bedtime. Anyway, the Sydney came up and escorted us from the Great Australian Bight to Fremantle, and halfway over that it left to go back and it got sunk 2 days later. That should never have happened. It should never have went under their guns. It nearly blew. It did sink. It was one salvo, but it was on fire and it sunk. But nobody was saved. That's what I couldn't understand. That was the biggest, saddest thing of the war, the thing that shouldn't have happened. The Sydney came up to relieve the other car of player ship that was escorting us, and then we went down 150 miles towards the Antarctic, or Arctic, whatever it is, to miss that raider that sunk it. Then we came back to the Indian Ocean, and that was the biggest waves I've ever seen. The ship would go up like this, as well as it had come down, it looked like I've got to go in the... I went to the front of the boat, and I couldn't see why it come back. That got sunk in Darwin after it came back.
That must have been quite terrifying, being in seas like that.
No, it was worth seeing. Nothing to what you do to get terrified. We got the Japs round us in a circler of us and put the machine gun there, and we thought, oh, here he goes. And they didn't, I don't know why they let us go. Then they did it again and the ground was warm on the road. We went to sleep. We woke up, we were still there. They didn't, they just put a circle around us and put the machine gun on us. Oh, the camp got hit, that's right, the second time. And yeah, the B-29s used to come over. When one got hit, it saw the one of the airmen jump out to parachute to land. And there was a reason they had to come in loader to bomb for some reason. They couldn't do it from a hot like the Japs did to us. But, yeah, that was a dead hit.
Whereabouts were you first stationed
to? When I went overseas.
Yeah.
Malaya.
And what was your first impressions of Malaya?
Good, the people were nice, and that was enjoyable, but it wasn't very long before it wasn't.
So after Malaya, where did you go to after that?
Well, we went up on the railway line. So when that was finished, we came back to Singapore. We came back from the railway line was finished, they brought us back to Singapore to take us to Japan. And I woke up and I said, hey, listen, we're going to see two German subs and our ship hasn't got any funnels. That's what I dreamt, believe it or not. And there was two subs. I only ever saw one with the swastika on the stern of it, the flag. And I said, I only saw one. I said, no, there's another one further down. I missed it, but I dreamt there were two. And, you know, quartered around where it was squared like that. It was a motor vessel. It was a French luxury liner, the Aramis, after those jokers with the French swords. And we got in a bit of bother. David Runge, and he lost both his legs. We were on the high seas, In the hold, it was stuffy, it was just crowded there. We used to sneak up topside, we were enjoying the fresh air. The bloody guard come along, we ducked down, and about four of the mates come up to me and said, "Davey's gone up topside," so I had to go up too. But that, we still did it after anyway, we didn't get caught again.
So that was during, at night time you're down in the hold?
We were in the hold all the time, but we used to come up in daylight.
Okay. And what was this ship called? Do you know what it was called?
The Aramis.
Okay.
Motor vessel. It was a French liner, it had been. It had a swimming pool with no water in it.
When you were away, did you think about home? Did you think about South Australia, about Adelaide a lot?
Yeah. Mm. I remember one joke aside, if I had nothing on, not even my G-string, I'd walk down Rundle Street. Wishful thinking. One lad, he walked past the guard. "Come back, come back. Oh, I'm coming up the railway station. My sister's up there to meet me." The Japs didn't bonus him anyway. They brought him back.
How did the whole situation unfold when you were captured by the Japanese?
We were in Singapore.
In Singapore?
Mm.
Yeah.
We wish we weren't there right then. It's a nice place, but not that time. It was a single line from Bangkok to Rangoon. We built it. The French wouldn't touch it. The English said it would take 7 years and it wouldn't pay for itself. And I think we did it under 12 months. It was pick and shovel. Well, we all ended up in Singapore.
Yeah.
And that's when it ended. That island there used to be called Blackamatty. They've got an overhead thing to it now. They didn't know we'd tossed it in.
Can you talk about this? Are you okay?
It doesn't worry me now. It's too long ago.
Yeah. The Japanese came through and overtook Singapore while you were there.
Yeah.
Did it happen really quickly or did it kind
of... A fortnight.
A couple of weeks, yeah. And how did you feel?
Well, the English in charge, the Japs were driving up by Changi. He said that's where they're going to come across. And we were told they wouldn't come through those... what he calls those things that grow alongside the shore that the fish breed in.
Okay.
But they came through that. It was the narrowest part of the straits. And it was about 3 days before he realised they weren't coming through Changi. There's one man, Pommy, blew himself up, blowing the magazines. And believe it or not, who come to clear them out after the war? The Japs.
So what date was this when the Japanese came through? Do you remember?
The 15th of August it finished. About a fortnight.
February, okay. 15th of February, 42.
Mm.
So how long were you a POW?
3.5 years to the day.
To the day. Did you have a feeling that you were going to get through that?
Oh, did you? Just one day after the other. We didn't know we were, until they condemned us to death. If they hadn't dropped that second bomb, we would have. But they had two of them. But there's one Jap guard running his bayonet of his rifle along the near the live wire. And he touched it, and they dragged him. His backside was nearly on the ground, and this little yank doctor said, "Get him out of here, he's dead. Don't bring him here, get rid of him." They put him in the ice hole because he wouldn't operate on. One South Australian had a double hernia, and it busted open at work, and he wouldn't operate, so they put him in the ice hole. That's about that tall cement with a get so he can get his rifle to hit you with it. So they put him in there for a while, be a bastard.
Wow.
And there was one man in there, he said, I just want to go to the, I want to go there and have a cup of chow. And otherwise you'd be screaming mad. Didn't have some daylight. And they reckon he escaped and they bonded him. Now there's no possible way you could get out of that unless they opened the door from the outside for you. And anyway, they shot the camp commander as soon as the war ended. We had Yanks, Dutch with us there.
And how many prisoners in total? How many prisoners in total in the camp?
In that camp, I'd be a guess, but I'd say at least 600.
Mm, really? And then what was the name of the camp? What was the name of the camp?
The camp, Furiosa Daiju Nanabunso.
Wow. On the
Fukuoka, that's the place. I don't know what the other words were. Furiosa Junanabunsho or something. And we worked in the coal mine.
What was your daily routine?
What was their routine?
Your daily routine, what was that?
Well, we're on three shifts. So we worked through all the shifts.
In the coal mine?
Mm.
In the coal mine, yeah. Was it really hard?
Well, it was work, but it didn't seem that hard. It was a bit better after the railway line. It's a bit easier.
Mm.
But we were in a small part because we were really tied down.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't wander, you couldn't do anything.
How was your health while you were there?
Oh, we didn't get scurvy, but we got beriberi and pellagra, that's starvation. Before the war, the African-Americans used to live on corn, maize. Well, yeah, they got pellagra because there was some vitamins they didn't have in it. And we got pellagra sauce now, bloody legs swollen up. That was near the end of that happened.
That must have been pretty painful.
When you sit down and when you stand up and the blood rush again, it used to hurt a bit. They operated one of my legs. They went in long and come out at the ankle. That was a bit of a bugger. They didn't put any, didn't numb it. But another joker, bloody Elsa was eating his little foot, little toe away. He was worse than me.
You must have a fierce threshold for pain.
My wife could take better than me when she had trouble.
Yeah. What about just those last few days that you were a POW? Could you talk me through those last couple of days and then when you were free?
Well, all of a sudden, the Japs were gone. And I looked in the guardhouse. There was all the rifles, the bolts turned back. And we thought they must have landed on the island. That's what we thought. We didn't think the war was over at that stage. But we were going down the mine when they came over, they dropped coloured lights where they're going to dropped the main thing, and they went run down the mine for their lives. We thought, that's funny, what's scaring them? And we knew something was up. We didn't know it was as good as it could get.
How did you feel when that was over and you could leave?
We just did as we liked. I know one lot used to throw their bottles in the corner when they were empty. We used to throw ours out the window. So the Chinese, I think it was, they bought the brewery. And we had, their beer was good. We had beer, one joker got on their trains, they travel fast up to have a look at the where they dropped the bomb. We went through Nagasaki by train to ship out anyway. But what we didn't know was English were there and they were like sunburnt red. We didn't know it was, they'd lose their bloody arms. There was a chimney or something and one other one just leaned on it like that. But nothing else, everything else was flattened. And coming by train, there was ashes, the body was just ash against the culvert and he got it there.
So for the three and a half years that you were a POW, you didn't know what was happening outside with, you had no idea of what was happening with the war? Or did you get bits of information?
Well, we were at Changi. We weren't there long. They used to give us barbellas. And I think somebody came up the causeway once near it. But we were given the news. We knew what was happening in Bona and up, what do you call it, New Guinea. But when they shifted us out of Changi to work, we didn't get anything.
So really cut off?
Yeah, we didn't have anything there with us.
And how long did it take for you to get back to Australia?
I think it was about October. They transshipped us at Okinawa. I think we went over a minefield there. And we went to the Philippines. We were there for quite a while. We had a good time there. And then the speaker took us home. Yank's ship was 5 months, new ship out, and it was the same as the speaker. Speaker had been out a while, but they stopped on the way a couple of days before we got home to clean it up. And you should have seen the sharks that come up to the boat and around it. And one of the soldiers on the boat, not one of the prisoners, he shot one of the sharks and it went away from the boat and stayed there waiting though, it wouldn't come in. And every time he pulled up with a hamburger or something, as soon as he came up, like, shoot, he said, let me see the thing first. And anyway, the sharks didn't get a feed that day.
Did you come back down the east coast to Sydney?
Yes.
So it was down and then into Sydney?
Yeah. Tasha and I were on the crossing the Jurong Road, I think it was called, the old the bridge at the what we were building for the Japs, and we went under the bridge, and there was a hand grenade there. So he defused, I think there was two. He defused them. We gave them to the officers. They put them on the railway line, but. We didn't hear any explosions, so I don't know what happened. And I think they changed the route of that train when I was over there. And Cranji was on that side of the Bucketima Road. That was rubber trees, they were all gone. And the cemetery was on the other side. I'll tell you one thing about a Chinaman. We're on the back of the truck going over the causeway to Kota Baru. My hat felt blew off. And it must have been, a mile back. And we were working just over the causeway. And he came over looking for me with my hat. He didn't have to. He could have. When I was at the pyramid, I brought this hat off. One of them, while I was here, was shining. And when I was going, I go to a joker. Oh, you thought I'd give me $1,000. He's telling everybody, and he pointed to me. He gave me his hat. He thought I'd give me a gold. But no, the Chinese and the Malays were good to us.
How did you find the Americans?
Americans?
The Americans, yeah.
Friendly. Well, I worked with them. I was the only Australian there for a long time while I was first there. And Louis Cena, we used to keep in touch after the war. He was a Bonza chap. And his offsider, I don't know how it come about, somebody's blanket, he got a piece of it, and the chap had him with it, and he got down the mine to work. So didn't see much more of him. And the officers, there was one that was in charge of us, he was a mongrel, one poor bugger, I don't know what he'd done to his knee, but it was healing too quick. And he jabbed something in it, and they took his leg off. And a week later, it was all over. I remember his name, and everyone could see him. And another one, poor bugger, they had these 44-gallon drums of water in case between the huts, in case of incendiaries. And they did drop incendiaries. And he jumped in one, and he got boiled alive. He lived for 3 days before he died. And there was a American Indian. He was in the camp all along. He used to stand up. There was a fence, and he used to be the corner there. That was a live wire behind him. And he was there a few days after the war ended, he died. But when the war ended, nobody died for 3 days. Then they started dying again. And another one, he's the only one I've seen with the rabbit's paw. Mm-hmm. He had one. Kid Carson, only little chap. He was a camp carpenter. And this framework collapsed on him. He said, "Hit me on the head, for Christ's sake." And they called for Cena, and he died. But he was Bond's little fella. I started to undo the shoelace to get his boot off. His foot was, you know. He said, "Leave it, Digger, we'll cut it off." I wouldn't have cut off a good boot. Now, the Yanks were right. We had trouble with some of the Dutch. They weren't very hygienic either. Blot washers.
Why is that? Why is
they
that?
They used water to wash themselves after using the toilet.
Have you ever been back to these parts of the world since?
Well, my plane dropped down at Singapore, and the ship went in there once, and I went to ride up to the causeway, and going up, the graves at Changi, I had a look at a few, nearly all unknown soldiers, but that's the most I've seen of Singapore since the war.
When the war was over,
yeah.
What did you do? What was the next part of your story?
Well, the ship took us to Okinawa. We transshipped to the Philippines, and then the speaker brought us home, and Mum had remarried. She was living up the country. Went up there. I just forget where I was living. I stayed with my elder sister for a while.
Elsie?
Yes.
Where did you meet your wife? What was her name?
Yeah. I was living over here and I don't know where I was, but a girl from the country, her mother wanted one of the daughters and didn't matter which one to marry her daughter, she didn't mind which one. I was going to a dance with her and she brought Shirley with her. And I took Shirley home. And that was it. 60, going on 62 years together.
Wow.
That's her up there. You can see her, can't you?
Mm, yeah, beautiful. She's beautiful.
It was the best thing ever happened to me after. No, we were married in 50. So it was before then.
So that night at the dance, you knew this was the girl for me?
Mm.
Yeah.
It's funny.
And what was Shirley's maiden name?
Hancock.
And where did Shirley come from?
It was called South Terrace. It's an extension of, you know, where the Queen of Angels Church is, that street, whatever it's called now, they changed it right through. That's where I met her. Oh, yes, I was living at Lloyd's on the South Road. John Vereker Lord.
So you were married in 1950.
Mm-hmm.
What about children? How many children did you have?
One.
One? So you had one child and you had a daughter,
mm-hmm.
Pamela.
I was living at South Road. I ended up living at Shell's place at South Terrace till I bought a place out at Norwood. That's where Pam was born when we were out there. The wife had toxemia. She didn't know anything about anything. For 3 days she was blind after birth.
Okay, but that came good? That rectified itself?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would be scary. So what did you do for a living?
Well, I did a few jobs. There was Foggett Jones, they've gone now. Mainly selling on the road, and ended up, the longest job was with the Red Tulip, the Smiths. They were the agent for Red Tulip.
And was that South Australia? Did you go interstate or was it just South Australia?
South Australia.
And did you enjoy that work?
I liked being outside. I don't like being in a factory.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't. I enjoyed that.
You get to meet lots of people with that sort of work?
Yes.
Yeah? Oh, that's good.
Yeah. I had a few cry when I was there. They changed our areas. Some of the women cry when I just wasn't coming anymore.
Oh.
And it happened to my mate too, Ron Fletcher. Had me long service, Steve.
At what age did you retire?
I think I was 54 when I was crook, and I don't think I worked, but I can't think where.
What other changes would you say that you've seen in your lifetime here in South Australia that you think are significant?
Well, what they did away with the trams was a good thing. But now they're bringing them back, it's stupid. That's my opinion. Some people say it's nice to catch a tram, but not me. I think they've finished.
Do you go into the city at all?
Since I've lost my car, I don't go anywhere unless somebody drives me.
So when did you stop driving?
They stopped me, they took my license. I know it was the beginning of this year, I think it was. I had pneumonia, and Matthew, I said, I've been here long enough in rehab. I said, come get me. And on the bottom of the letter is council licence. And that was, I think it was this year when I...
This year? Lost
it. If it wasn't, it was the year before.
So are you're getting by okay without the licence? Mm-hmm. Are you getting by okay without the licence? Like,
yeah,
well, managing?
It's a bit awkward not having a... I want to go to the bank and go to the shop. I can't unless Matthew's here to take me. It's a bit awkward.
Not many people can say they're still driving at 99.
Well, I know Kerr Grant was driving his car at 93 because I seen him driving it. But I suppose not. the brother still had his license, and he was older than me, and he had a, what he called a stroke. He didn't drive again.
If you could give the youth of today and following generations some advice on leading a long life and a good life, what would you say?
Well, just lucky one, I guess. Well, don't smoke.
Did you ever smoke?
Yeah.
Mm. How many a day?
I wasn't a heavy smoker.
Mm-hmm.
I went to work, I'd come back from holidays, it'd been 100 degrees. I used to have a smoke going to work. I didn't think of it. And lunchtime, no cigarettes, nothing in the glove box. Haven't had one since. I missed it for about 3 days. I took a bit of willpower, but...
Leslie John Dawson. Jack?
Yes.
Thank you very much for talking with me today. It's been an absolute privilege to meet you. And I look forward to coming back and looking at some photos and to hearing a few more stories regarding your photos.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
If you or someone you know would like to be captured in a podcast, contact Christian Teusner via this email address, theemutree@gmail.com. theemutree@gmail.com. My name is Christian Teusner. Thank you for listening.